Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And with the madness that is the Premier League's opening weekend of the season now firmly behind us, we can open up our wings on the podcast. And today's show is all about the nine. The fox in the box, the gun, the deadeye, the poacher, the goal machine, whatever you like to call them, the focus today is all on centre forwards. As we look to get the guys' view on who is the current world number one centre forward. So in order to get a picture of what a true centre forward is all about, we'll be looking at what it takes to carry that weight of expectation on your shoulders, particularly as no position on the pitch has evolved as much in the last 10 years. We'll also be looking at the current candidates for the position of top gun as Romelu Lukaku makes his return to the Premier League, Harry Kane's possible move, will he, won't he, to Manchester City rankles on for yet another week. And then Bundesliga rivals Robert Lewandowski and Erling Haaland renewed acquaintances with each other once again this week. And then to wrap up, we'll be taking a look at some of the other key metrics, as it's not just about goals and smashing the ball in the back of the net when it comes to the world of centre forwards, as we go with the team's shouts for the best target man and the best poacher. Right then, let's get into it. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me to battle the way through the great and good of goal scoring, it's Squawker's very own Mohamed Butt. Mo, how's things?
Yeah, getting better. Ready to jump in and head in some crosses, some other, battle with defenders, some other striking metaphor. You know what I'm talking about. Dead eye in front of goal, two chances, two goals, on a hat trick, subbed off on 60 minutes, sitting in a crowd stands, throwing my shirt on the ground.
Said like a true IT crowd reference, Mo, there. Brilliant. And then we have the fox in the box, the toad in the hole, the ghost at the post, whatever other ridiculous cliches you can come up with. The man behind the numbers and the man behind the goals, Jake Entwistle. Jake, how's things?
Yeah, going well. Looking forward to this one, as you said, with Lukaku, someone that I am a big fan of, and him finally coming back to the Premier League. Tracked him pretty closely during his seasons at Inter, wanting him to do well. And the fact that he's back for 97.5 million is pretty exciting.
Before we get into some of the names, obviously Lukaku, Kane, Haaland and Lewandowski are the ones that we've pulled out of the bag as the focus in terms of the best centre-forwards, best nines, best central attacking forward, however you want to slice it up and phrase it. But before we get into some of the names, Mo, I just want to talk about the job itself. We know that it's evolved in terms of what's demanded from someone that plays as a centre forward or as a central striker now. But in terms of the position itself, when we talk about perceptions of what a centre forward should be, whether it's the Premier League, whether it's La Liga, whether across Europe or across the world, there's so many different interpretations of what a central striker should do. For you, how has the position changed specifically? What has been the biggest change? When you think back to maybe early Premier League, through the 90s, through the noughties, you could almost throw a blanket over the centre forwards for various teams in terms of characteristics, the runs they made, the types of goals that they've scored. But obviously the influence of European and international players into the Premier League has remoulded and changed things. And now the role itself is almost unrecognisable from a 90s central striker. What do you think has been the biggest change from what was always held up as the most glamorous position on the pitch?
Well, you say things have changed, but have they really? Like in the 1950s, and this is the 1950s now, Nandor Hidakuti of Honved and Hungary national side, he was false nine. He was playing a false nine, withdrawn forward. The idea being, they used to man mark back then, so the opponent, you have a centre half marking your centre forward. If you just pull your centre forward, the guy in the number nine shirt, deep, aka literally false nine, then the defender would go out with him, and then there'd be no central defender at the back for teams, playing their standard formation at the time, WM. And then you could just have your two guys, Coxis and French Puskas, run in and score goals. So it's the requirements of being a number nine, being a striker, have been up and down. It's a cycle, right? It goes in moments. Like, we all like to think of the English number nine as this big, lumbering, Nat Lofthouse-style beast. But then Jimmy Greaves was an English number nine. Small, quick on his feet, like a little Michael Owen without hamstring problems, it's come and gone in cycles. What I think has changed the most in the recent era versus the 90s, let's say, which of course, the best example I can think of a 90s striker is Duncan Ferguson, right? We used to say good touch for a big man, right? Now we just say good touch. That's what it is, I think. It's the increasing technical proficiency and tactical awareness, right? So Harry Kane is the ultimate example of the modern centre forward, in the sense that, for England anyway, in that sense that he's tall, he's strong, he can run in behind well. He's not very quick, but he can run in behind, times his runs well. And he's a great finisher. He's a brilliant finisher. But there's so much more to Harry Kane. We've said it before in this podcast, like he's discovering all these new superpowers that he has. So, you know, Kane is not enough to just be running behind, taking 100 million shots every game. He had to round his game out. So he learned how to hold the ball up, play back to goal, learn how to pass the ball. And to the point where last season, I mean, he had like 50 assists in the first three games, didn't he? Or something like that. Dropping deep and pinging in these ridiculous through balls for Son. Right, like, I mean, apart from Lionel Messi, I've not seen a striker that confident and that comfortable at playing long range through passes as Kane was last season in particular. So it's just the fact that strikers now have to do more than just score. So Romelu Lukaku is another great example. Jake's best mate. Come back, you know. Again, we think of him as a number nine, as a guy through the middle. But where's he done a lot of his damage for Belgium? Playing on the right.
I think you've sort of alluded to it there. My perception of what's changed the most potentially is the fact that the goals have moved out from the centre forward to wide. So with 4-4-3 coming in and or even 4-2-3-1, again, I know they're not revolutionary and we saw them before the last 10 years, but to me, it seems that the biggest change in what makes a forward, there's a reason you prefix forward with centre forward is because they play in the middle, and then you never really thought of anyone as wide forwards, but that term in itself has become almost a must in the lexicon of football descriptions now, isn't it? Whereas before it might have sounded like a hipster or sort of niche reference. But if you look at the Golden Boot winners in the Premier League, when Salah came in and literally broke the record for most goals in a 38-game season, he played on what we would have said is right wing. But there's a greater understanding now, especially with Firmino's role, as we said. Firmino is the centre forward, but he's probably the third most reliant on goals in that Liverpool front line, which if you said that during the 90s, as we said, is if you said your right winger's got to score the most goals, the fact that most people were playing a 4-4-2 and the right winger was crossing it and looking for the assists, that's for me where the perception has changed. So this discussion about number nines is even more interesting, because is the best number nine now the one that scores the most goals? And without sort of tailing off on my own too much, that is entirely dependent on the team you play for now. There's not one tactic that fits all in the Premier League. There's not one particular formation that everyone plays and has a striker. So Liverpool's best number nine might not be the best number nine for Manchester City or another team, for example. Real Madrid's best number nine might not be suitable for Bayern Munich. And there are obviously players that are just insanely talented and could play number nine for anyone in the world. But what I find exciting and interesting is that you can create all of these new archetypes of centre forwards and you could have a best for each one.
When we look at some of these names, obviously we've said Lewandowski, Haaland, Kane, Lukaku with an eye on the Premier League. When I look at Lewandowski first, obviously he's been sensational, not just for Bayern Munich, but previously with Dortmund. But in terms of the window that we're looking at, we're kind of trying to measure this over the last three or four seasons. Robert Lewandowski, we talked about this idea of a true or a pure number nine, a centre forward, a little bit of a throwback. And he does still tick a load of those boxes. From, you know, the way that he plays and that he wants to be in the box a lot, he's very good in the air, to the fact that he almost looks like he could have played in the 50s with his Brill Cream haircut and his quite straightforward style. He turns 33 this weekend. I think I can speak for all of us when I say happy birthday, Mr. Lewandowski, on the absolute off chance that you might be listening. But aside from birthdays and birthday cakes, he does bang in a lot of goals. 30 plus league goals in five of his six seasons in Munich. Mo, that is incredible. And when we talk about strikers, there's always this throwaway of, oh, he almost guarantees you a goal a game. When you actually look at Lewandowski's numbers, he does. from the last four seasons is a goal or an assist in three of the last four seasons is at least 1.0 every single game. And when you kind of translate that out and take away penalties and that type of stuff, running average of 29 goals per season and a running average of a goal a game, not just he gets you about a goal a game, he actually does get you a goal a game.
I mean, forget four seasons, mate. This is a decade-long thing, right? Often this last decade is spoken of as the decade of Cristiano and Lionel Messi, right? And obviously it is, right, in terms of their mark the era. But there have been three number nines that have marked this past decade, the entire decade, of being brilliant almost for the entirety of it, right? So you have Edinson Cavani, who emerged. He was kind of good at Palermo, 15 goals, went to Napoli, literally, I think it was 2010, and just exploded. 30 goals at Napoli, did it again the next season, was just incredible for Napoli, scoring so many goals there. I went to PSG, is I think currently still PSG's all-time top scorer, right? So phenomenally successful. I think he's only had one season where he's gone, he dipped below single figures, and that was his last one at PSG, where he had injury problems and fell out with the coaching, right? He's been phenomenal. But he's starting to slow down a bit now. He got 17 goals last season for Man United, but you could see Man United had to manage him very well, right? The other striker marked the decade, his mate from across the road, literally almost, in Salto, Luis Suarez, right? He obviously had a massive season in 2009 with Ajax, but not top league. Went to Liverpool. And around 2011, same sort of thing as Cavani, exploded, right? Absolutely mad. Had the best season of any number nine in Europe in the past decade, in 2015-16. Scored 59 goals. Had, like, I think, over 10 assists. Ridiculous season. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, but look at him. He's starting to slow down now. The last 3 years, I mean, anyone knows me knows that how I think about Luis Suarez. He's starting to slow down. And as much as he scored 21 goals last season, bit slower. Lewandowski, on the other hand, emerged the same time, 2011, right? Really, for Dortmund, scored his first 30-goal season in 2011-12, won the Bundesliga. Won the Bundesliga, won the DFB Pokal 5-2. I think they beat Bayern in the final, historic. And since then, he's just not stopped. He's just not. This is the thing. Mm. As much as those two, Suarez and Cavani, were like, they emerged a bit earlier, Suarez hit high heights, Lewandowski has just not stopped. It's been ridiculous that in the last, since 2011-12, 30 goals, 36 goals, 28 goals, 25 goals, 42, 43, 41, 40, 55, 48. And he's got 3-2 so far this season. He just does not stop scoring goals. And that's what is so incredible about him. Is that he's only a year younger than Suarez and Cavani, I have to point this out. So while they are obviously tapering off, he's just going. He's not showing any signs of slowing down.
Unless it's Cristiano Ronaldo that you're measuring him up against. Jake, when you look at Lewandowski and his situation in the Bundesliga, for quite a few seasons he has had it essentially unchallenged. You go back to Aubameyang leaving in 2018 to go to Arsenal, and there is a new kid on the block, just as Lewandowski looks set to just dominate, absolutely dominate the Bundesliga scoring charts right up until he retires. Erling Haaland, as he does, has burst onto the scene, and 18 months at Salzburg was enough to convince Dortmund to bring him into the club, and he looks absolutely tailor-made to just go on and dominate. We talk about changes to the position, how players need to adapt and need to evolve. Haaland, in the way that he plays, in the way that he carries himself, he seems to have almost space jammed it, where he's taken a bit from everyone. He's gone, I'll have your finishing, thanks. I'll have your power. I'll have your speed. I'll be as quick as Ronaldo. I'll be as deadly as Lewandowski. I'll be as creative as somebody else. He has absolutely space jammed it. And when you look at the way that he plays and the impact that he's had already, we look at some of his numbers. Obviously, we're balancing it against a longer career with Lewandowski, but the last three seasons, he hasn't dropped under a goal per game, kind of averaging around 1.3, 1.4. XG since 2018, he's averaging 18 a season, which is not as much, but obviously we balance that against his age. But he is getting the magic plus one a game. In fact, he's actually better than Lewandowski. He's getting 1.1. When you see all of these things getting thrown into the melting pot for Erling Haaland, and the fact that he's got probably over a decade still to come, he's an absolutely terrifying prospect.
Yeah, we did when he broke all of those Champions League records, which again is just the sign of an absolute obscene talent, is if you're winning the Champions League Golden Boot at in your season that you turned 21 years old, and your team didn't even make the final, then that's pretty ridiculous. And the fact that he'd scored 8 the season before that for a team that had played their first Champions League season in a while. Yeah, we've spoken about him a lot. You've summed it up perfectly with that Space Jam analogy. The man can be, in fact, I think it was in the 5-2 win against Frankfurt in the opening game of this season, he cleared the ball from an opposition corner and then said, I'm going to be in the opposition box within 2 seconds, almost like he's teleporting from one end of the pitch to another to try and get onto another cross. And yeah, Lewandowski isn't slow or isn't necessarily sort of encumbered by movement, but there's no way that he's making up that ground in the same way. So as you said, Erling Haaland, pretty much a complete forward at 21 years old, was getting a bit frustrated in that in the Bayern Dortmund matchup. Obviously, Bayern winning another Super Cup over Dortmund because he was battling against Nicolas Sulla and Upamecano, who both bounced off him and he bounced off him a couple of times. But I think with Haaland, the fact that he's got that style of play in which he can score within 3 touches of the ball, I think that's, I know he does so much more of that, but he's got that devastating knack of when he receives the ball, the one thing in his mind is that he wants to score. And I keep looking to my left because I am referencing lots of numbers and trying to keep on top of them. But over the past 3 seasons, so before this podcast, I just crunched loads of numbers from since the 2018-19 season, Europe's top 5 leagues, only forwards, and 430 players came up in the list that played over 1,800 minutes. So I'm just getting that really boring bit of criteria. So that will, anything I reference is based on that. So keep that in mind. Only one player in that list averages fewer than 40 touches per non-penalty goal scored, and that's Erling Haaland at 30.7. Every 30 touches he's having is a goal. And touches, obviously, as we mean, isn't dribbling with the ball. It's an on-the-ball action. So every pass, take-on, aerial duel, shot. He's one of the most devastating players in Europe because most of the time, and that's a goal. I haven't crunched numbers for how many touches it is before he has a shot. But the fact that he can manipulate pretty much any situation on the pitch into a goal-scoring opportunity, whether that is because he can run past someone, whether that is because he can actually dribble past someone inside the box. He actually ranked joint first for dribbles completed inside the box last season in Europe's top 5 leagues, or was in the top 3. I haven't clarified that one. But to avoid rambling on, I think the best thing that you can say about Haaland is that at 21 years old, wherever he receives the ball on the pitch, you wouldn't be surprised if within 5 seconds a goal is scored. And I don't think that there's many players in world football, let alone strikers, that you think that's going to happen with.
I've never been more convinced by the fact that there has been some sort of Space Jam nonsense gone on. And unless Michael Jordan and Bill Murray rock up in the Bundesliga next season, I'll definitely be 100% convinced. Moving from Germany to England to the Premier League, obviously Haaland and Lewandowski have got their own little shootout for as long as Lewandowski is still playing and as long as Mo said, Haaland stays in the Bundesliga. The Premier League this season, Jake, is going to be treated to their own version. Romelu Lukaku back at Chelsea, £97 million. Harry Kane, whether he stays at Tottenham, whether he goes to Manchester City, obviously still remains up for debate. But what we can be almost certain is that he is going to be playing in the Premier League season. So I want to take a little look at Lukaku. Obviously, 2 seasons away from the Premier League, 2 seasons with Manchester United we're going to look at in terms of numbers alongside his 2 seasons with Inter Milan. Lukaku, in terms of perceptions, there does seem to be quite an unfair, quite a stunted approach to what Premier League fans think of Lukaku in terms of the player that he is and in terms of the level that he's at. For me, he's answered all of those questions. For me personally, before he even went to Inter, he didn't really need to convince me. You could see already what a player he is. But he's crossed the T's and dotted the I's during his time in Italy. And again, looking at his numbers, no, he doesn't average exactly a goal a game based on GA for Inter Milan. He's kind of a rolling average of 0.75, 0.8. His numbers, again, are probably in and around Haaland's 15 per season, but that was based on that last season at United where it was difficult. But he does get between 06 and 07 per game. He is back in the Premier League. Chelsea fans are obviously delighted to have him back. You would expect him to just have a straight shootout with Kane and Mo Salah for top goal scorer this season, although Jamie Vardy might have one or two things to say about that. Lukaku coming back into the Premier League, what can fans expect from him? There's still this perception of him as, are we going to have the United Lukaku or are we going to have the Inter Lukaku?
Well, I'm pretty sure they're going to get the Inter Lukaku. One, because Tuchel's already referenced that they might even not just use him in the 3-4-3, which is different to what he was playing at Man United, but Tuchel even referenced straight away that they might look to rock a 3-5-2, which is what got the absolute best out of him. Working in tandem with Lautaro Martinez last season, again, they were the highest assist to score a combo, sort of combined goals between two players in that league in the same way that Son and Kane were in the Premier League. And what you mentioned there about perception of Lukaku and what we've spoken about centre forwards is because Lukaku is a really big guy, it's easy to expect him to play that throwback role of hold the ball up, flick it on, lay it off and don't do anything else. But as Mo alluded to at the beginning as well, Romelu Lukaku is probably more of a wide forward than he is a centre forward. The favourite versions of him that I have and games that I feel like he's played the best in is, I remember at Man United, to use an example, as you said, to say that he was still pretty good in a Man United shirt, even though it didn't go all to plan. I remember in the FA Cup, he played right wing against Arsenal and I think Jesse Lingard played false nine. He didn't score, but he got two assists and absolutely ravaged the entire team. And that's when anyone that watching that and didn't think he was a good player would be, I would need to ask them a few more questions. And then in Belgium, at the last two major tournaments, there's been some really interesting tweaks from Roberto Martinez, which he also did with Lukaku at Everton, in which he would play Lukaku right wing in order to make sure that he wasn't getting suffocated or isolated, especially if they're up against three centre-backs. So by playing him slightly off-centre, you remove the expectation that he's just got to play back to goal, absorb it, lay it off, which he can do. But his best ability is peeling off into space, charging down opposition defenders, running into the box and firing shots in on goal. And he's completely different to Harry Kane in that sense. I know, again, Mo mentioned that Harry Kane has been developing the ability to carry the ball a bit more, but that's more from deep in order to create space rather than sort of running in channels, because Son was doing all of that. Kane was the one supplying the passes. Lukaku and Kane, in my opinion, I know they're never going to play together, but in order to sort of try and paint this picture of different types of forwards, most of the time you would say, could Lewandowski and Haaland play together? Maybe. And you try and pair people up and say you'd probably only play one. Kane and Lukaku playing together would probably be the most overpowered duo that actually works you could find in European football. And that's because of Lukaku's ability to run channels, the stereotypes of what you would associate with someone that's small and quick and runs in the channels, like you said, Michael Owen. Lukaku plays more like Michael Owen than he does Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah, I used to call him a 6'3 Chicharito, because he just, the way he plays, like, he's huge, but he runs the channels like a quick, nimble little forward. He's got the pace to do it as well, to be fair.
And that's why I think in this Chelsea side, just to go back to that, the reason why I'm completely confident he's going to score lots of goals is because their front line is so fluid and they also have the ability to play Havertz in between Lukaku and Werner or Lukaku and someone else, that we're not going to see him resort to this default Premier League number nine mode in which he'll become just a target man. I'm pretty sure he's going to be running with the ball in transition most of the time. He does have the link-up play, and as I said, the relationship he had with Lautaro Martinez shows that he can provide assists and be the provider as well as the scorer. Kane and Lukaku were two of three players last season to score 20 goals and provide 10 assists alongside Memphis Depay, who again is one of those sort of centre forwards that doesn't fit any of the traditional molds, but plays really well in a central position. So Kane and Lukaku as well, who broke through at a really similar time in the Premier League and were two of the most prolific players. Obviously, Kane was at Spurs, Lukaku was doing it for West Brom, then Everton. I'm really excited to see them two sort of back in the same league again, because I think, as you said about Lewandowski and Haaland having a bit of a rivalry, and we always talk about Messi and Ronaldo not competing, but obviously comparing their tallies, Kane and Lukaku, to me, are really similar players in terms of the way they've developed and the time they broke through. So that battle is going to be super interesting to follow.
Looking across to Kane, Mo, obviously now Lukaku coming back into the Premier League, he presents a huge weapon for Chelsea and Tuchel to use. And for the wider Premier League, we get one of the best strikers in world football back in English football. But inevitably, despite the fact that £97 million has been spent to bring Lukaku back to the Premier League, Kane is still grabbing the headlines. He's still dominating the chat surrounding transfer gossip. Will he stay at Tottenham? Will he go to Manchester City? When we talk about Harry Kane, we do generally talk about him always within the context of the Premier League. Obviously, that's because he has only played in the Premier League. And there's always this argument when you kind of have a player that's only played in one league, whether it's just England or just Spain or just Italy, where it is difficult to measure them up against, and inevitably they come in for a bit of criticism. And when you hold Kane's big numbers up against some of the other strikers, Lewandowski and Haaland, he does fall a little bit short. Again, this role in average, the kind of golden number one per game, he does fall short of that. He's kind of rolling around 0.7, 0.8 for a goal or assist per game. When you translate that out to a course of a season post 2017, it's 19 goals in the league and 0.7. So that is under Haaland and Lewandowski. But as Jake rightly points out, a portion of that is due to a change in his role and a change in what Premier League fans expect from a central striker. Kane's output in front of goal is inevitably going to drop if he's being asked to play a different role. I think in the last 18 months or so, we've seen him have 10 on his back and play like a 10, whereas in the past, that wasn't the case. Early on in his career, we thought of him as a thoroughbred 9 through the middle, goals, 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 goals. Now we're seeing this assister, this playmaker, almost a kind of inverted quarterback that allows Bergwijn and Son to power on and score goals. He's moved his role around, and that's put him in the conversation as the best centre forward in the world.
Yeah, it has, absolutely. And this is why I mentioned him in the intro, right? Because Kane is not... he started off just being this number nine, shot, goals. The big joke is he has to learn how to do more than just shoot all the time. And he has. And I mean, not to toot my own horn, but when Lukaku was moving to Man United, I did say, I think this guy, Kane is the world-class striker in the Premier League since 2016-17. I was saying Lukaku is going to be the next one to join him. Now, I thought it would happen when he moved to Man United. But obviously, Jose Mourinho had other ideas, and so did Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But via Inter Milan and Antonio Conte, who, by the way, he's always wanted to work with, that was a big attraction for him going to Inter. And I don't think it's a surprise that he's left or been comfortable leaving Inter without when Conte left Inter. I think if Conte was still there, it would have been very hard or harder for Chelsea to convince him to come back to the Premier League. But so he's back, and now we're going to finally see Lukaku versus Kane as the leading goal scorers. And like Jake says, they're brilliant because they are both excellent in terms of being goal scorers, but they are different goal scorers. They're not the same. It's not going to be two guys up front just trying to bang in as many goals as you can. It's you've got two guys who are different kinds of goal scorers. Kane is... There is a reason Man City want Harry Kane, right? And it's not because he's a poacher. It's because he can do everything. If he went to City, he could play false nine. Pep loves to play false nine, loves to have his centre forward drop deep and dominate the ball in midfield and all this and that. And the problem with that sometimes is when you play a deep block of a team, a very organised deep block like Chelsea in the Champions League final, for instance, they don't come out when the false nine comes out. They just stay there. And so what you've got is you've got a line of three defenders in the box ready for anything you throw at them, right? So unless you get your passing angles absolutely perfect, and I mean, admittedly, City did a couple of times and then fluffed the finishes, you can't score goals, right? It's hard to score goals. What you need then is a centre forward to move those defenders around. But then you have to sub someone on and it wrecks your chemistry and blah, 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 blah. With Harry Kane, you could play, oh yeah, Kane, drop deep, dominate the ball, false nine. Oh, it's not working. Okay, Harry, go up front. We're going to try a different approach. And you do that without making any subs, without having to do even much tactical differential. Just move him, say Kane, say Harry, instead of starting 10 yards deeper, move 10 yards further closer to goal, please. And it changes everything because he can do it. He can do everything. He's absolutely incredible. And we're definitely, he's going to almost ruin his reputation, or he has almost to a degree right now, by trying to move to City. But you mentioned that he dips below the golden, the one goal per game, right? He's playing for Spurs, guys. Now, I know for a couple of years there, Pochettino had Spurs really high up and really playing well. But he's playing for Spurs, right? And to do what he's doing playing for Spurs, which, I mean, we don't need to bring up the Chiellini quote, but, you know, we know what's in the nature of Spurs. So it's like, to do that. And look, we talk about the Premier League. He scored against Barcelona. He scored against Juventus. He's played against Real Madrid. Didn't score, but he played brilliantly. He scored against Dortmund. He's in the Champions League. He's scored against Bayern Munich. In the Champions League, this is the stage for this guy. And this is partly why he wants to leave, right? He gave Spurs a year out of the Champions League. He said, I'll do a year in the Europa League for you guys, right? He believed in the Mourinho project. And they didn't get him back in the Champions League. You can't have Harry Kane in the Europa League. He's a Champions League caliber player. That no ifs, no buts. That's it. That's why he wants to leave Spurs.
Remember, the Champions League record I mentioned about Haaland earlier, the quickest to score 20 goals, that was broken by Harry Kane the sort of year before. So in terms of pedigree, despite playing for Spurs sounds harsh, but the reputation of that is Harry Kane, until Erling Haaland came along, was the fastest player in Champions League history to score 20 goals in the competition, which is pretty good.
Especially when you consider, again, he's not playing easy teams. Like, again, Barcelona, Juventus, Bayern Munich.
Yeah, because of the seeding of it.
Spurs never had a gimme group. They always had a tricky group. And he always delivered against the biggest and best. And I think it's almost a crying shame that, A, Barcelona and Madrid are broke, and B, that he doesn't want to go abroad, because I would love to see him in La Liga in a foreign, because he has the technique and the ability to really make it work, to really thrive. Like, especially with old number 10 leaving Barcelona. I mean, I know Memphis has gone there now, who's like a sort of a Dutch version of Harry Kane almost. But it's a shame that Harry Kane was like, oh, he could have filled those boots perfectly. It would have been great. But look, if Man City get him, which I think they will. I mean, look, just again, looking back at numbers, 14-15, his season he emerged, 31 goals, 28 goals, 35, 41 in 2017-18, right? 24, dropped a bit, had some injury problems, dropped a bit deeper. 33 last season, the most amazing one, because it was last season the one we associate with him playing as a 10.
Oh, he won the golden boot, didn't he?
He still scored 33 goals, guys. He's absolutely, he's absolutely outrageous. And we definitely take him for granted because he's English and we see him all the time and we see all his foibles and he wasn't very good at the Euros. He's utterly ridiculously world class, and if City can get him, it changes everything in the title race. Because as scary as Chelsea are with Lukaku, who by the way is just going to play Timo Werner's role running the channels, but just better than Timo Werner can. Like, so that's mildly to intensely terrifying. Anyway, you put Kane in the Man City team, and it's basically like Friday the 13th times 100. It's the scariest thing you could possibly imagine.
Before we get you to kind of nail your colours to the mast and who you're going to pick as the ultimate, Jake, I just want to ask you about Kane. We can't talk about Kane and not talk about City and the rumours about whether he will go there. And Mo raises a really interesting point. And for me, this is possibly the undoing of Kane going to City and why there could potentially be a snag in the deal, other than Daniel Levy just turn around and say, no, I'm not selling him. When you look at Kane's numbers, there has been a notable shift. And that's come from his position. The numbers that Mo rattled off before, when he first broke into the Tottenham team, it was goals, goals, goals. It was plus 20, it was plus 25. And then in all competitions, he was breaking 30 and stretching up towards 40. He does still score a lot of goals, but the average has dropped. And when you look at some of the deeper numbers, touches, you know, carries of the ball in and around the box, there is a noticeable shift. He's consistently had less touches inside the box across the last 2 and 3 seasons. He's consistently had more touches in the final third, but not in the box. Consistently had more carries, consistently had more receives in the final third, which shows to me he's getting the ball and he's obviously playmaking. When you look at a City team, particularly with Jack Grealish added into it, Jack Grealish's touches in the final third, Jack Grealish's touches inside the box are absolutely astronomical. You throw in Sterling, Torres, Mahrez, all of these players, all of them like to get on the ball in the final third. They like to get the touches in, quick 1-2, get around the corner and create a chance. Given the fact that City have played that way for so long under Guardiola and Kane's role has changed, if Pep Guardiola was signing 2015-16 or 2016-17 Harry Kane, you would say, this makes absolute sense. This is exactly what you need in that team. They're signing 2020-21 Harry Kane, who's still a fantastic player, but is there an argument that he could get lost in the noise of a huge amount of players that want to conduct the play, but nobody that wants to get the other side of an opposition defender and score a goal?
The thing I'd say about the drop-off in some of the numbers is Harry Kane still had the most shots and the most shots on target and had the highest expected goals in the Premier League last season. So I think anything that we're seeing in his change of game hasn't removed that from his game. It's just he's added it on top and therefore it becomes less prominent. If Harry Kane went to Man City and was asked to be slightly more poacher-esque, as we said, or stay further forward, then I'm pretty sure he would excel at doing that. But if anything, the fact that Man City played so well last season with people running beyond their centre forward who didn't actually exist, Harry Kane can play that role and then at the flick of a switch become a striker. So if anything, to me, I would be completely confident in him scoring lots of goals at Manchester City, because the fact that he has developed into an absolute complete player means that when teams are really deep and he needs to just drop deep to allow the wide forwards to run on, especially if Sterling plays, then he can do it. But the fact that they don't play that number 10 and they play two eights as well means there is always a lot of space. So I don't think he'll be taking up anyone's space. Playing 1-2s with the wingers that drive inside, he can receive wall passes and bang it back to Grealish and Mahrez, who can shoot from outside the box. He'll probably get on a lot of tap-ins from the fullbacks, and he can receive and through balls from De Bruyne and then just smash it from anywhere from 6 to 56 yards out. So I think it's definitely worth a discussion in the sense that he has changed his role, but he's just added to his game. Nothing's been taken away.
Right, we've kind of held off on this long enough. I'm going to ask you to make your big predictions. We've talked about four of the best strikers in the world. We've had Space Jam Haaland. We've had birthday boy Lewandowski. We've had Romelu Owen and soon to be or likely to be Manchester City's Harry Kane. If you could theoretically bring any of these players into your side, if you had Mo Athletic, Jake Town, and you had the money to buy one player to fit into a system, to be your go-to man, Kane, Lewandowski, Haaland, and Lukaku. I almost forgot his name there, talking about Michael Lukaku. Mo, we'll go to you first. You've got the option. You've got unlimited money. You can bring one of them into your team. Who is the number one? Who do you go to?
Erling Haaland. With the greatest respect to Lewandowski, he's 33. No. Lukaku is fantastic. Kane is fantastic. Yeah. I love them both. Harry Kane in particular can just literally do anything. But if I need a goal scorer, if I want a striker, right, and as much as Jake is correct that a lot of goal scoring now comes from wide players, if I need a striker, this kid is a freak of nature, man. As far as the age thing, he has a massive year on his advantage. He's 21. The other guys are in their late 20s or in their 30s. He's just unreal. The speed at which he moves, the terrifying ability you have to then play on the break, which doesn't exist with the other guy. Well, actually, no, Lukaku's great on the break. But the terrifying ability to play on the break, to play the short game, to play the long game, the medium game, every kind of game you want, he can head the ball. He's not great at it, but he can improve. He's great on his feet. He's great on his feet. He can do the 1-2. The short passing. Often players that play really, really quick counter-attack football, the short passing Barca-style football is often beyond them. But if you look at his goal against Sevilla in the Champions League last year, where he runs up to exchanges passes with, I think it's Royce or Sancho, who flicks the ball back over the fence, he runs through. That's a 5-yard acceleration. That's a Samuel Eto'o-style acceleration, which is, for a guy that size, is remarkable. Because he does it against Jules Koundé, who is so sharp, and Diego Carlos. It's ridiculous to see him do that, because guys that big usually can't move that quickly over that short a distance. And that's what makes him so remarkable to me, is because you can play the counter-attacking game and he scores so many goals on the break and it's all wide open fields in the, you know, it's like the Dothraki, it's wide open fields in the Bundesliga. But in the short game where defenders are tighter, they're sitting deeper, there's the line, the faces aren't as big, he can still accelerate in a space of 5 to 10 yards and kill you. And he just reminds me of just a Titan from Attack on Titan, Eren Yeager. He just explodes. And you can think, oh, everything's fine, oh my God, no, and he explodes into the game. And just suddenly you've conceded 2 goals in 5 minutes. He's absolutely remarkable. Erling Haaland, 100%.
If you're going to do it in this exact state, I think you buy someone that you could essentially probably keep for 10 years or sell him for 400% profit when everyone realises they need a 90-goal striker. The one person that... So my answer would be for that question, Erling Haaland, without repeating anything that I've said before, but the one player that I feel like we might get criticised for not mentioning at all in terms of best centre-forwards is Karim Benzema, who... Based on what I said about Ronaldo playing out wide before at Real Madrid, there's arguments, obviously, that Benzema was the perfect foil for those wide players to score tons of goals. And in this, in the same way that Karim Benzema is certainly not the most prolific, although his goal tally has increased since Ronaldo left, unsurprisingly, I think he is definitely worth a mention in terms of top centre forwards in world football. Based on the fact as well that he doesn't play the traditional role of just scoring and being the man inside the box. If Real Madrid didn't have Benzema for the last 10 seasons, then they would definitely not have won as much as they had done. So I just wanted to give a shout out to him in terms of forwards that play centrally. Obviously, we've not even mentioned all the wide forwards that I said score all the goals at the beginning of the game, beginning of the podcast. But to reiterate, I don't think there's any striker that you would buy, someone that has averaged 0.99 goals, non-penalty goals per 90 minutes since joining a top five European league and 21 years old. I think that is a clear choice for any transfer strategy.
Yeah, I agree. He's an absolutely frightening character. And as Mo points out, just the sheer basic of his one step is most people's two or three. I think when you're operating with those metrics, it's just absolutely unfair. But Erling Haaland just doesn't seem to care because he's just that good. Right, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we're going to be sticking with the subject of centre forwards. But Jake has been crunching some of the key numbers. We're going to be talking about different types of centre forwards, target men and poachers. We talked about throwbacks before. We're going to be getting into that. Who is your go-to man to pop a direct ball into, and who is the ultimate fox in the box? We're going to be talking about all of that in just a second. Hello and welcome back to the Squawker Talker podcast. Today is all about centre forwards, the guys that get the goals, the guys that make the chances, and most importantly, the guys that win games. We've talked about some of the biggest names in world football, Lukaku, Haaland, Lewandowski, and of course Tottenham's, or possibly soon to be Manchester City's, Harry Kane. But as we all know, it's not just about scoring goals or racking up big targets and totals across the course of a season. It takes so much, much more to be an elite centre forward. And Jake's been crunching the numbers, doing his homework over the last couple of days and looking at how the position's evolved and some of the things that still remain when we talk about a centre forward and how some of the positions have changed. And one of the big throwbacks that we talk about in football is a target man. Duncan Ferguson got a shout out from Mo at the start of the podcast. He's someone that you'd throw into that bracket. Even within that position, within this target man idea, it has changed as a position. So, Jake, we're going to throw it over to you on this. When we think of a target man, we think of someone that receives the ball either on the chest, flick-ons, powerful, brings other players into play. You've been looking at some of the big numbers behind target men in European football, and there is some interesting names that you might not expect to be on the list, particularly when you associate certain characteristics with them.
Yeah, so just to preface all of this, none of this is saying that the person I mentioned is the best target man. I've just tried to use all of the incredible resources we have available to try and find some cool little nuggets about types of players and how, as we said, I think centre forward, it's impossible just to say someone's a good centre forward. It depends on your style of play and what you want from that particular player. So leading on target men, as you said, two interesting metrics that people probably didn't even know were available. I thought I associate a target man with, obviously you mentioned the headers and the aerial duels and throwing it back to that way, but there's two metrics that Opta actually collect data for. One of them is layoffs and one of them is a flick on. And obviously a layoff is someone passing it with any part of the body back to a teammate, and a flick on is pretty self-explanatory. To find people that play as a target man, not just do a lot of layoffs, I looked at the percentage of total touches that were layoffs. And there is one man that stands above all, and this is in Europe's top five league since 2018-19, forwards and wingers, with 1,800 minutes or more. There is only one person that has over 10% of their touches as a layoff, and that is Olivier Giroud. And if I were going to pick one of the best target men of recent years, he would be top of my list all the time. And layoffs, especially, if I was going to rename that to a player stat, it would be the Olivier Giroud stat, because the best wall pass centre forward in Europe, in my opinion. And it's interesting that Lukaku, that we mentioned, who has been described as not very good at it or isn't useful at it, is actually in the top 10 for this as well in terms of percentage. But Giroud is so far ahead. The next player is 9.21%, and it's Fernando Llorente. So I said they were silly metrics, but already we've probably identified two archetypal target men of the last 5 years. In terms of the flick on one, you literally produce target men for fun in this. The top of it is Callum Patterson from Cardiff City. Obviously, their one season in the Premier League during this time. 21.9% of his touches were a flick on, which is, I found, just quite amusing, because that is exactly what I associated with him doing that. And the next person on the list is Joselu, who obviously had a stint at Newcastle and is now a battering ram in La Liga. So yeah, silly metrics, but it is useful. If I'm not saying this is how scouts work, and I'm not trying to say that this is all you need to do, but if you were a team looking for a target man or a centre forward, if you played a direct style of play, I imagine this is the sort of stuff that you would drill down into, but probably with a bit more nuance than just how many flick-ons do they do.
I think it's also telling when we talk about players that we associate in the past with flick-ons and target men, we've now got probably two of the most handsome people to have ever played in the Premier League that are now top of the list in Llorente and Giroud. In the past, I wouldn't dare call Duncan Ferguson anything other than an incredibly attractive man, but others might not. And Mo, like, in a very odd way, but we're obviously kind of joking about who's handsome and who's not, who's hot and who's not. But it is also almost kind of a strange microcosm of the change. The things in the past that we associated with these type of players, of long balls, winning headers, they would have broken noses and scars. The evolving of the game, as Jake rightly says, flick-ons, winning aerial duels are a part of it. But as the game has developed, it's actually become way more effective to have a fantastic ability to just wall pass a ball off to a striker that's coming off you than getting engaged in a one-on-one battle with a centre-back where your chances of winning it are probably less than 50%.
No, absolutely. I was going to say Luis Suarez probably must rank highly for layoffs as well, because he does a lot of them, a lot of little touchbacks, wall passes to Messi. But yeah, Giroud is the king of it. And I love Giroud, just so underrated, and just like constantly plays with excellent players, and everyone said, all the excellent players are like, he's so great, I love playing with him. And then coaches and fans just don't appreciate, this guy is a dream to play with. But yeah, I would have thought Luis Suarez probably ranks highly for that. He's really good. Lewandowski must do a lot. Lewandowski and Müller always seem to be like laying the ball off back and forth to each other, doing little touches and wall passes and flick-ons. But I would have thought Suarez ranked highly for that as well.
That's just to describe it. I think Giroud is, as I said, probably like the best wall pass in Europe, but he is the perfect reset button for high volume dribblers. Because as you said, Eden Hazard, if he's right, if he's riding four challenges, if he's losing balance, he can flick it. As long as it's in Giroud's gravitational pull, Giroud could pull it in and set it back onto him while Eden Hazard's regained his balance. So that's why, remember, France won the World Cup without their centre forward having a shot on target, but Giroud was the reset button for Kylian Mbappe. So those are my little target man metrics. You mentioned poacher, Fergal, as the other sort of traditional description of strikers. So for this one, again, I've done like a percentage of total touches. And rather than just goals inside the opposition box, I've looked at percent of touches inside the opposition box. So this is, again, not actual physical touches of the ball. It's on the ball actions and how much of that it happens inside the box. And again, to show that data can be useful, the man that tops this list is Mauro Icardi, of 24.98% of his total touches inside the opposition box. And I'm pretty sure if you were going to ask most people to write a caption for Mauro Icardi, as we would do on social media, if you did a squawker search of Mauro Icardi tweets, I'm pretty sure 90% of them have poacher at the bottom of it. The second on the list is Jamie Vardy. And the third, even though we know he can do much more, is Mr. Erling Haaland again.
There's nothing he can't do.
No, but that's really interesting that Icardi, not that Icardi's at the top of it, because that's like you said, you would expect that almost. But I like that Vardy has got like most of his, because you associate Vardy with lung-busting runs from like 30 yards. But you think about it, how much of it, what he actually does outside the box is he just touches the ball forward beyond the defender, gets into the box, and then he does his damage. And even now, lately, he's started doing his damage as involved passing it to Iheanacho. I think he got the most assists for Leicester last season or something like that. So even now, if that's his damage, he's still doing that. Obviously, he can still score goals, as we saw opening weekend of the Premier League. So that's really interesting to me that he's there. I mean, Haaland being there makes perfect sense, obviously. Again, it's the same sort of thing. It's like if he touches the ball outside of the box, it's to get the ball into the box and then do his damage there. And he's, you know, he's obviously just devastating. Vardy being in there is really interesting to me. It shows that how he's. I mean, he's 34 now, right? It shows how he's able to narrow his focus down to make his impact where it counts. Because obviously he's getting older now. He's not the same guy that rampaged to the league title in 2015-16. So he's managed to adjust his game to stay effective and stay imperious almost. I mean, let's see how he goes now. Because now that Patson Daka's there to sort of push him, will that just sort of spur him up to be even like, I'm not going to let you take my position. I'm going to be brilliant all season now. Let's see.
I was just going to say, when you look at all these players, and obviously Jake's touched on Jota, he's definitely not what you would talk about when you think of a stereotypical centre forward, the way that he plays, his build, his running style. Obviously, Vardy has had to modify his game. You mentioned it, that he's become arguably more of an assister with Iheanacho in the last 12 months, and now Patson Daka coming in. This kind of runs all the way back to what we talked about right from the beginning, which is never more has the role been more demanding. And not just from an Erling Haaland who's 21 and making his way in the elite game, right the way through to your 33-year-old or soon to be 33-year-old Lewandowski, 34-year-old Vardy. Every one of these players every season is demanding more from themselves and having more demanded from them, from the managers and their coaches. The role never stops. The role never stands still and says, this is what we want from you this season. As tactics evolve, as formations and setups evolve, every single one of these players is having to react, whether you're 18 or you're 34 or 35. And that's what makes it so hard to pin down the essence of a centre forward.
Yeah, like that's honestly it. Like even the term centre forward is almost antiquated now, right? Because we're talking about like Lukaku is a centre forward, but he doesn't play in the centre all the time. Sometimes he plays, moves to the wide. Sometimes strikers make outside to in runs or inside to out runs, right? They run the channels. You know, strikers are such an important part of the game. Roy Keane always says, you know, repeatedly, every time, the hardest thing to do in football is score goals, right? And I know it sounds really droll because he keeps bloody saying it, but he's right. It is the hardest thing to do in football. Football's a low-scoring sport. And players that can put the ball in the back of the net are really invaluable. But with all things evolve, like you said, so now it's not just enough to put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's plenty. If all you do is score, that's still plenty. But the very best strikers are now multifaceted. And so, and what's going to happen is, and what's great is, like right now, Erling Haaland is kind of a freak, right? But what's going to happen is in 5 years, people are going to look at Erling Haaland and say, okay, so if we have this a really big, fast kind of play, we don't have to necessarily make him a centre-back or make him a full-back. We can make him a centre-forward, right? So what we'll see is now we'll start to see, right now Erling Haaland is a unicorn, but we'll start to see more Erling Haalands emerge as clubs realise they can put their physically dominant players in attack and just work on them with technique and stuff to teach them how to actually be forward, and they can then be useful rather than, let's say, putting all the great athletes at fullback. Like Achraf Hakimi is a wing back, right? Who's to say that in 5 years, the next Achraf Hakimi won't be a striker or a pure winger, right? Rather than playing fullback, right? Because, I mean, he basically is a winger, but yeah, you know what I mean, right? Like an actual like winger, not just playing wing back, being a winger. By the way, PSG are going to be terrifying in attack to watch. Just, that should be fun. So there's so much variance to the role, and so much is going to change over time, because now we're seeing the old generation sort of fade away. Suarez, Cavani, Lewandowski, right? They're all Vardy. They're not going to go quiet. They will not go gentle into that good night. Don't get me wrong. They will rage at the dying of the light, but they will. Their light will eventually dim, and then the mid generation between them, the only two real leading lights in terms of that middle generation as the goal scorers are Kane and Lukaku, and they will emerge and be the heroes. But then we've got this younger generation of centre forwards, and not just centre forwards, but forwards. So we haven't even mentioned, I don't think, Kylian Mbappe yet. Like the kid who's just, you know, beyond all expectation and reason and logic. No, Jake mentioned him once, I think. But like, you know, we're talking about strikers. We haven't mentioned Mbappe more than once in the whole podcast because he's not a centre forward typically. But maybe now he will be. Now that Messi's at PSG, Messi, Neymar, Di Maria, who's just centre forward? It's not going to be Icardi, right? So now maybe Mbappe in a year or in a few months, we'll be talking about Mbappe as a centre forward. And that's frankly terrifying if you look at the way that guy moves between space.
It's a position that's super exciting. And the more variance we get, I think the more interesting it is to discuss and treating each striker as an individual striker rather than saying, how many goals have you scored, is something that's really enjoyable to discuss, as has been on this episode.
Yeah, indeed. I think, obviously, all with the numbers coming through with Jake, I was waiting for some more ridiculous names, maybe Andy Carroll or someone to get thrown in, but you can't have everything. Guys, we're going to call it there for the Squawker Talker podcast. Happy birthday, Lewandowski. Haaland, if you haven't watched Space Jam yet, give it a go. Nobody tell Duncan Ferguson that we didn't call him handsome. I think that's about it. Mo, Jake, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. And don't forget, if you hit subscribe on this episode, you can get a brand new one as soon as it is ready. We're here through the 2021-22 season, talking about all things Premier League. And every now and again, we have a chat about something a little bit left field like today. We'll speak to you again very, very soon.